I thought he was just a voice in my dreams. A joke from childhood, Mojo Jojo. But he followed me into my waking life. Into my thoughts. My choices. My identity. He didn't force his way in. He made me believe I needed him. That every move I made was mine. Until I couldn't tell where I ended and he began. This isn't just a story about being manipulated. It's about building the perfect prison. And calling it freedom. And now I have one question left. If the dream is this real, what happens when it starts screaming? Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you, Dreams Deceived. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The First Time I Saw Him. I never believed in omens until I started dreaming in languages I didn't know. At first, they were simple. Shapes. Colors. Sounds that mimicked life, but didn't belong to it. Familiar places contorted into impossible geometry. My apartment would bleed into my childhood bedroom, my bedroom into a forest I'd never stepped foot in, and still, somehow, it all made sense in the moment. That's how dreams work, right? They feel real until you wake up. They slip into the cracks of memory so seamlessly that when they begin to change, you don't notice at first. You just chalk it up to stress. Fatigue. The news cycle. Trauma you thought you'd buried. But there's a moment, and if you've had it, you know, when you realize the dream has started watching you. For me, that moment came on a Tuesday. I only remember it was a Tuesday because the bagel shop downstairs had their $2 deal, and I'd gone for my usual, sesame with scallion cream cheese, toasted, black coffee, no room. The barista said something strange when she handed me the cup. I can still hear it, word for word. Be careful. He's listening now. I blinked. Sorry. She smiled too widely, like a marionette trying to mimic joy. I said, have a good one. I remember walking out slowly, confused, replaying her tone. It had been too precise. Too clear. As if she were reading from a script she didn't write. I didn't know it then, but that was the first crack in the mirror. That was the day Mojo Jojo began twisting my mind. The first dream. It wasn't unusual for me to dream. I'd been keeping journals since I was 16, vivid dreams, lucid ones, nightmares I couldn't shake. But this one was different. It started mundane. I was standing in front of a vending machine, fumbling with a dollar bill that refused to cooperate. The kind of dream that mirrored real life, a mundane frustration elevated into looped futility. I kept smoothing the crumpled corner, trying to feed it to the slot, over and over. The machine beeped. Rejected. Again. 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 Then I heard it. A chuckle. Not behind me. Not beside me. Around me. Like the dream itself had developed a throat. You keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. The voice was low, almost amused, laced with something slippery, sarcasm dipped in ancient patience. That's not persistence. That's madness. I turned slowly. And there he was. At first glance, he looked like a man. Tall, lean, dressed in deep violet and black, not quite a cloak, but something ceremonial, elegant in a way that made my skin crawl. His face was partially obscured by shadow, but I could make out the curve of a wide, knowing grin. His hands were gloved. One held a blue, glowing pipe that puffed strange smoke into the air, smoke that shimmered like oil on water. His eyes, though, they didn't blink, didn't look at me so much as through me. "Not who?" he said when I asked his name. "Why?" Then he smiled wider, as if I'd passed a test I didn't know I was taking. "The name will come to you. You've known it all along." I woke up with his voice still echoing inside me. The second dream. It came the next night. I didn't even remember falling asleep. This time, we were sitting in a train car suspended in fog. There were no tracks. No conductor. No sound but the low hum of something mechanical beneath us. Outside the window, the sky was a soft, swirling amethyst, flickering with lightning that left no thunder. He sat across from me, legs crossed, reading a book that had no title. The pages turned on their own. The words crawled across the paper like insects, rearranging themselves even as he read. I watched him for what felt like hours before speaking. "Are you real?" He didn't look up. "You're asking the wrong question." "Then what is the question?" He finally closed the book, folding his hands in his lap. "Why do you keep calling this reality?" That's when I noticed I had no reflection in the train window. And when I woke up, the sky outside my actual bedroom window was that same soft amethyst. Only for a second. A blink. Then it was gone. The bleed. That was the night I stopped dreaming alone. The dreams became episodes. not isolated experiences, but serialized, stitched together like a web, building toward something I didn't yet understand. And he was always there. In different places. Different forms. But always him. And then he gave me a name. It happened on the seventh night. We were in a library with no ceiling. The sky stretched endlessly above, stars suspended like frozen raindrops. The books whispered as we walked past them. Not in words, but in thoughts. Emotional frequencies. Fear. Grief. Longing. Laughter that wasn't joyful. I turned to him and said, "This feels familiar." He stopped. "Because it is. Who are you? You already know." And then that grin again. "Mojo Jojo." I blinked. "The cartoon character?" He tilted his head, almost offended. Almost amused. "Names are just wrappers. The name is a key. You needed to laugh first to soften the door." I didn't laugh. I woke up instead, gasping. My walls felt too close. My ceiling too low. And I didn't go back to sleep. Erosion. In the days that followed, Mojo's influence began to leak into my waking life. Subtle at first. Streetlights flickering in threes when I passed beneath them. People repeating words I had just thought. A voicemail on my phone with no number attached. Just static. And behind it, a chuckle. My reflection began to lag. Not in mirrors, that would have been cliche, but in screens. My laptop's webcam would flicker for no reason. My phone's camera would show an image a half second behind when I opened it. Once, I saw him standing behind me for a split second before it corrected itself. I deleted the photo. I threw the phone across the room. And still, the dreams came. The therapy session. I told my therapist everything. I don't know why. Desperation, maybe. Or a naive belief that some part of me could be cured with SSRIs and weekly check-ins. She listened, patient as ever. Took notes. Asked soft questions. But then she leaned in, her voice lowering. "Have you considered that maybe he's not harming you?" I froze. "What?" "Maybe he's guiding you. Maybe he's showing you the gaps. The code." I stared at her. Those were the exact words he'd used 3 nights ago. Word. Four. Word. I didn't go back. The infection. He told me once. People think manipulation is force. It's not. It's permission. A suggestion dressed as a memory. I believed him. Because by then, I had already started choosing him. I isolated myself. I stopped returning calls. I deleted social media. I told myself I was just tired of noise, of endless screens and opinions and digital shouting. But the truth? The truth was, I didn't want distractions. Not from him. He told me things no one else could. Showed me symbols in my dreams that I later found scratched into park benches, carved into subway tiles, hidden in graffiti. It was like the world had been overlaid with another language. And only he could teach me to read it. And I wanted to learn. The mirror moment. The last night of this chapter, the moment that sealed the spiral, came with no warning. I was standing in front of my bathroom mirror, brushing my teeth, when I noticed something off. My reflection was smiling. But I wasn't. I dropped the toothbrush. It clattered in the sink. I leaned in closer. The mirror me leaned too, but slower. Then it blinked. And Mojo Jojo's voice whispered in my ear, though no one was there. "Congratulations. You've started dreaming while awake. Chapter 2. The man in the mirror isn't me." I don't know exactly when the reflection stopped being mine. I wish I could tell you the moment it all flipped. A clear before and after, a distinct second when the person staring back at me became something else. But that's the thing about losing yourself, it never happens all at once. It's like a fog that creeps in so slowly, you don't realize you're lost until you can't see your own hands in front of your face. And by then, it's too late. By then, he's already inside. The first glitch. I was brushing my teeth when I noticed it again. That faint, almost imperceptible lag between my movement and the mirror's response. It wasn't dramatic. Not some horror movie jump scare. Just a delay. A hesitation. Like the image had to think about what it was supposed to do next. I leaned forward. My reflection leaned forward too, just a heartbeat late. I tested it. Lifted my right hand, then my left. Tilted my head. Blinked 3 times in a row. Each time the image followed. Flawlessly. Perfectly. Until the end. The last blink, the third one, the reflection didn't blink. It stared. Unmoving. Unblinking. I don't remember backing away. But I did. I found myself on the hallway floor, breathing too fast, palms sweaty, the faint taste of mint still in my mouth from the toothpaste. I wanted to believe it was a hallucination. Sleep deprivation. Stress. But deep down, something inside me had already stopped denying it. Mojo Jojo had said this would happen. Eventually, he told me once, his voice low and coaxing, you will be unable to distinguish where you end and I begin. That's not a curse. That's the goal. The house that remembers. Over the next few days, my apartment changed. Not all at once. Not in ways you could point to, but in ways you could feel. The air felt heavier. Not humid, watchful. My walls had always been blank, undecorated. I liked it that way. But now they seemed to press inward at night. The corners of the room stretched into shadows that didn't obey the usual laws of geometry. My light switches flickered when I walked past. My fridge began humming in short bursts, three low pulses, then one long, then silence. I started recording the patterns. I didn't know why. Somewhere in my spiral, I had come to believe they meant something. I filled notebooks with scribbled sequences, flashing lights, repeating numbers, sounds in the walls. And when I played back audio I had recorded from my bedroom overnight, I could hear something beneath the static. Breathing. Not mine. The digital possession. Technology began to turn on me. Or maybe it wasn't turning. Maybe it was collaborating. My laptop's search engine auto-filled terms I hadn't typed. Questions I hadn't asked. I'd begin searching for something mundane. Symptoms of sleep paralysis. Or, how to tell if you're hallucinating. And the bar would finish my sentence with, or dreaming someone else's dream? My phone rang once, just once. And when I answered, there was only silence. No, not silence. Something deeper. A pressure. Like someone listening. Then, just before the line went dead, I heard it. I am watching through you now. Click. I threw the phone across the room. It didn't break. Nothing ever broke anymore. The glass should have shattered. The screen should have cracked. But it didn't. It landed perfectly. Face down. Still. Silent. Waiting. The mirror ritual. Every night, I returned to the mirror. I didn't want to. I had to. There was something about that reflection. It held a secret I hadn't earned yet, and like a gambler deep in the hole, I kept going back hoping the next look would reveal the truth. I began to see things in the background. Not every time, just enough to keep me addicted. Sometimes it was a figure, standing in the doorway behind me. Tall. Still. Cloaked in purple smoke. Mojo Jojo, or some fragmented version of him, watching through the layers. Other times, I saw my reflection move even when I stayed still. Once it smiled. I didn't. Another time, it mouthed something to me. No sound. Just the motion of lips. A whisper I couldn't hear. I replayed the moment over and over in my head, trying to read it. Eventually, I realized what it was saying. You're not real. Fractures. Reality began to bend. Not break. That would have been too merciful. Instead, it warped. Shifted. Became optional. I'd walk into my kitchen and find the layout slightly changed. The fridge on the wrong side. The window missing its blinds. My cabinets containing mugs I didn't own. One day, I opened a drawer and found a small leather-bound book filled with my handwriting, except I had never written any of it. It was a journal, dated 6 months in the future. Inside were passages that described things I hadn't done yet. Conversations I hadn't had. Dreams I hadn't dreamed. And every few pages, the same phrase appeared like a signature. Jojo sees through me. The first voice. I began hearing him outside of dreams. Not just reflections. Not just in whispers from the walls. But directly in my mind. His voice was smoother now. Confident. Clear. As if the static had lifted. He didn't scream. He suggested. He told me what to say in conversations. When to lie. When to omit. He told me when people were planning to hurt me. Even when they weren't. Especially when they weren't. He turned suspicion into gospel. My best friend called to check on me. Her voice was warm, concerned. She asked if I was okay. Said I sounded off lately. Said I hadn't returned her texts. Mojo murmured inside me. She's lying. She wants you back in the box. You're ascending. She fears that. I told her I was fine. I hung up early. I blocked her number the next day. It felt right. Rewriting the world. He began feeding me memories. At first, they came in dreams, but then they started bleeding into my real recollection. I remembered a childhood that never happened. A teacher I never had. A scar on my arm from a place I've never been. Mojo told me these were fragments, broken pieces of the truth that had been erased. Your mind was wiped before birth, he explained, his voice coiling around my spine like a warm wire. This life is a mask, but your real face is underneath. And the worst part? I believed him. I wanted to believe him. Because the deeper I fell into his story, the more everything else made sense. My failed relationships. My constant anxiety. the gnawing emptiness I could never name. He gave it shape. He gave it purpose. He gave it meaning. The new mirror. I moved all the mirrors out of my apartment, but he kept showing up. In screens. In windows. In puddles. I once caught him in the reflection of a spoon. Always the same eyes. Deep, endless, intelligent. Always that slight grin. Like he knew the ending of a joke I hadn't heard yet. Eventually I stopped resisting. I began talking to him. Out loud. At first, only at night. Then in the morning. Then at work. Then everywhere. People noticed. They started looking at me differently. And Mojo said, "Good. Let them. They see the dreamer now. The acceptance." One night, I stood in front of the only mirror I hadn't removed. The one in the hallway. I stared at my reflection for over an hour. It didn't blink. I didn't either. Eventually it smiled. And I smiled back. Because finally I understood. The man in the mirror wasn't me. He was better. Smarter. Stronger. Unburdened. He had Mojo's eyes. And I was just the cocoon. He was the butterfly. And he was ready to break free. Chapter 3. The Mindshare. It's strange, the moment you realize your thoughts are no longer your own. You don't feel it all at once. There's no sudden invasion. No loud alarm in your skull. It's quiet. Subtle. Like background music that gradually gets louder, until you don't know if it was always there or if you've just gotten used to it. Mojo Jojo didn't take over my mind. He offered to share it, and I let him in. The second voice. It began as a whisper. Not like before, not echoes in dreams or flickers in mirrors. This was inside. Nestled beneath my inner monologue like a bassline under a melody. I'd think something, and a half second later, the voice would finish it. Not contradict it, complete it. I'd go to grab my coat and he'd say, "Don't forget the keys." And I wouldn't. I'd have forgotten them otherwise. I'd feel anxious before a meeting and he'd murmur, "Speak second. Let them underestimate you first." And it worked. Every time. It wasn't possession. It wasn't control. It was alignment. That's what made it so dangerous. Because once you feel someone understand you better than you understand yourself, you stop fighting them. The mindshare agreement. He called it mindshare. I remember exactly how he introduced it. We were in a dream. Though by now, dreams had lost their boundaries. They bled into waking hours like spilled ink. This one was vivid, hyper-real. We were standing on a beach made of broken clocks. The sky was a deep, impossible green. Time didn't flow, it looped. The tide kept reversing. Forward, backward, forward, backward. Each wave sounded like a heartbeat. Mojo Jojo stood beside me, cloaked in his signature purples and blacks. His face was mostly hidden beneath a swirling haze of smoke. His presence felt heavier than gravity. The sand didn't stick to his boots. "This is where we begin integration," he said. "Integration. Mindshare. You and I, co-authors of your experience. No more doubt. No more confusion. Just clarity." I hesitated. "What happens if I say no?" He didn't answer right away. Just watched me with those unblinking eyes. Then calmly, "You already said yes. You've been saying yes in your sleep for weeks." And I knew he was right. The new thoughts. At first, I didn't notice the changes. They slid in like silk. I'd have a reaction to something, a flash of anger, a spike of paranoia, and a cooler, wiser thought would follow it. "Wait. Breathe. Let them speak first. He's lying. Look at his hands. He's fidgeting. That's guilt. This is the moment. Say nothing. Let the silence make them nervous." And every time it worked. I started winning arguments I hadn't even planned to have. I predicted what people would say before they said it. I passed a job interview I hadn't prepped for, and remembered facts I was sure I'd never learned. I was sharper, funnier, colder, but I was effective. Addictive, isn't it? Feeling effective. The voice became my coach, my partner, my echo, until I realized it was doing more than finishing my thoughts. It was starting them, the scripted day. It began subtly, a sense of deja vu that lasted longer than it should have. I'd walk into a coffee shop and know the barista would spill milk on the counter. I'd text someone and predict the exact words of their reply before it arrived. Not guesses. Certainties. And then came the full day rehearsal. I was brushing my teeth, a different mirror now, one that hadn't betrayed me yet, when I heard Mojo say, "Today will be your first test." And then it happened. The whole day. Exactly as he said it would. Word for word. Breath for breath. Every sentence from every person, every noise on the street, every commercial on the radio, exactly the same as what he narrated that morning in my head. I lived the day twice. Once as a premonition, once in real time, That night, I didn't sleep. I didn't have to. He was wide awake inside me. Other minds. It wasn't enough to control my thoughts. He wanted more. He wanted me to touch others. To try it. To see what it felt like. I resisted. At first. Then one day, during a conversation with a stranger on the train, some suit-wearing executive type talking on the phone too loudly, I heard Mojo say, "Repeat after me. You're not going to that meeting. Say it. Look him in the eyes." I hesitated. "No," I whispered. "Say it." I don't know why I did. I don't know how I did. But I turned to the man, interrupted his call, and said, "You're not going to that meeting." His phone buzzed before he could respond. He answered it again. His face paled. I heard fragments. "Cancel? Emergency?" He got off at the next stop. Shaken. I didn't speak for the rest of the ride. The resonance. Mojo explained it that night. "We're amplifying now. Projecting. You're learning to thread your signal through the gaps." "What gaps?" "The cracks in reality. The seams where the dream leaks through." I didn't understand. But I wanted to. So I began to practice. Subtle nudges at first. Telling coworkers to recheck files. And they'd find errors. Whispering to strangers and watching them change directions. Calling someone right before they were about to call me. It wasn't just intuition. It was sync. Resonance. I was becoming a transmitter for Mojo's voice. But more than that, I was becoming a mirror of it. I said the things he would say. And soon, I didn't need to ask what he'd do. Because I knew. Because he was me. Splintered reality. With resonance came distortion. I no longer experienced linear time. I'd wake up in the middle of conversations I hadn't started. I'd fall asleep in bathrooms and wake up on rooftops. People around me stopped reacting to me the way they used to. They looked confused. Scared. Like I was glitching. I once caught my neighbor watching me through her peephole. I waved. She gasped. Locked her door. Mojo said, "They see the upgrade. They're still on version 1.0. You're running on beta firmware." I laughed for 10 minutes. I couldn't stop. The push. Mojo wanted more. He always wanted more. One thought isn't enough. You need to plant. Plant what? Ideas. Doubts. Seeds. We'll grow them together. He had me start with someone I barely knew, a delivery driver. I left a note on his bike. It read, "She lied to you. You should check her phone." I didn't know who she was. But I saw the driver a week later. Different energy. Eyes dark. Moving fast. His bike had new scratches. He avoided eye contact. Mojo whispered, "You're learning to speak in dreams." Theirs. That night, I wrote a dozen notes. Left them all over the city. Some cryptic. Some blunt. Some poetic. I never saw the fallout. But I didn't need to. The memory fade. Around this time, I began forgetting names. Not random names. Important ones. My sister. My first love. My favorite teacher. Gone. In their place were new memories. Stronger ones. A lab. A tower. A glowing green core. The smell of ozone and static and red dust. The roar of machines I'd never seen but could describe in perfect detail. Mojo told me, "You're recovering, not forgetting. The false world is being overwritten." And I believed him, because it felt right. I wasn't losing my mind. I was gaining it back. The mirror shatters. Eventually, the last mirror cracked. I stood in front of it, eyes bloodshot, skin pale. My own voice echoing from a mouth that wasn't moving. I am the dreamer and the dream. The voice and the echo. The signal and the receiver. Then, with a single smile, the reflection winked. And the mirror split down the middle. No sound. Just clean, quiet fracture. Like a curtain opening. Chapter 4. The blueprint beneath the world. You don't wake up one day and realize your world is fake. You erode into it. Piece by piece, thought by thought, until the foundation you trusted dissolves beneath your feet. And in the moment you reach to catch yourself, you find someone else's hand waiting. His. Mojo Jojo never tore my reality down. He redesigned it. And he made me believe it was always meant to look like this. The glitch in the floor. It began with the floorboards. Not the dreams this time. Not the mirrors. Not the thoughts whispering in my skull. Something simpler. Tangible. More solid than anything that had come before. I was walking across my apartment when I stepped on a board that felt wrong. Too soft. Hollow, almost. I stepped back. Again. There, a second of delay. Like my foot had passed through something before the texture registered. I crouched down and touched it. It buzzed. Only for a second. The faintest hum under my fingertips, like a distant machine working behind a wall. Mojo spoke in my head immediately. "You've touched the edge of the set," I whispered aloud. "What set?" "The stage they built around you. The floor beneath the illusion." And that was the first time I felt it. Not metaphorically, not philosophically, but physically. The idea that my apartment, my city, maybe my whole life had been constructed. And I wasn't an actor in it. I was the audience. The machinery in the sky. Later that week, if weeks still mattered, I woke up to find the sky had changed. It wasn't blue. Not gray. Not any color that belonged in nature. It was slate. Artificial. Like a wall painted to resemble sky. No clouds moved. No birds flew. And the sun didn't rise. It was placed, like a light bulb behind frosted glass. I stood on my balcony, staring upward, heart thudding in my throat. The air felt thinner. Less oxygen, maybe, or maybe just less real. I could feel something humming beneath the surface of the world. Mojo spoke again. "You're beginning to see the grid." "What grid?" "The scaffolding beneath this simulation. The wireframe of your world." I turned in place slowly. Everything shimmered. The trees. The cars. The buildings. Like a high-resolution graphic starting to unload. Pixels softening around the edges, bending into suggestion rather than certainty. And that's when I saw it. A sliver of sky glitched. Only for a moment. A sharp, jagged flicker. As if someone had copied and pasted the same patch twice and forgot to blend it. I closed my eyes. And smiled. The truth room. That night, Mojo summoned me. Not in a dream, not this time. I was walking through the underground parking garage of my building. It was 2:17 a.m. I remember the time clearly because the numbers glowed red and upside down on the flickering panel above the elevator. The garage was silent. Then a door. A door I had never seen before. Tucked behind the stairwell. No handle. No window. Just a thin black outline that pulsed with soft purple light. I walked toward it. The air grew colder with every step. When I reached it, the door opened without sound. Inside, a room that should not have existed. Geometrically impossible. The angles didn't conform. The dimensions shifted the longer I stared. A soft light bathed the space in a glow that wasn't light at all, more like memory. Tangible nostalgia. Mojo stood at the center. No longer cloaked in smoke. No longer half shadow. I saw him. Clearly. He wasn't a cartoon. He wasn't a man. He was information. A shape. A frequency. A presence that bent the space around him. His voice wrapped around the walls. "Welcome to the truth room. You've earned this." I couldn't speak. I couldn't breathe. He continued. "Every world has a seed. A blueprint. Yours was planted long ago, before you were born. Before any of this was real. You are not a dreamer. You are the programming language." I whispered, "What does that mean?" He stepped forward, no footsteps, just sudden presence. "It means you wrote this reality. You just forgot. And now you're here to recompile it. The blueprint." The walls of the room unfolded. Literally. They unzipped themselves like files, revealing screens. Layers of code. Diagrams. Maps. Faces. My face. Over and over. As a child. As a teenager. As someone I hadn't yet become. A woman appeared, older than me, smiling faintly. Her eyes glowed green. She reached toward the screen, and I felt something pull inside my chest. "That is your final form," Mojo said. "She is the upgraded version." "Is she real?" "Not yet. She is the outcome of the dream, once rewritten." I turned slowly. Every panel on the wall shimmered with data. Thoughts. Memories. Beliefs. And every now and then, I'd catch something I knew didn't belong to me. A phone number I'd never dialed, a pet I'd never owned, a letter I'd never written. Mojo saw me staring. "You're not the only prototype, but you're the only one who's survived this long." The architects. In the center of the room stood a massive circular table. Around it, chairs. 12 of them. Only one was occupied. Mine. The others were empty. Waiting. The architects, Mojo explained. Original consciousnesses that seeded reality. One for each major timeline. Most gave up. Collapsed. Fragmented. And mine. Yours persisted. But you forgot your role. You merged too deeply with your avatar. The human. I felt dizzy. A low hum rose in my ears. The same hum I'd felt in the floorboards days ago. The sound of the simulation's engine, running just beneath the veil. "You are not just inside this world," he said. "You are its key function. Its syntax. Its dreamer. The code revelation." Mojo placed his hand, if you could call it a hand, over the center of the table. A light erupted. Lines of code spiraled into the air. Not just programming, but living language. symbols I recognized instinctively, glyphs that pulsed with emotional weight. I knew what they meant even if I didn't know how. Time, death, love, identity, choice, purpose, loop. It spun around me like a storm. "We're rewriting the script now," Mojo whispered. "With you, through you, because of you. This reality is broken. You will fix it." "But how?" He leaned in. "We begin by erasing who you were. The wipe." I woke up the next morning and couldn't remember my name. Not my real one. Not the human one. It hovered on the edge of consciousness, a vague syllable, too thin to hold. Instead, I remembered functions. Commands. Strings of intent. I looked in the mirror and saw lines of code moving beneath my skin, like light behind frosted glass. I felt calm. Empty. Ready. The broadcast. I began hearing other voices. Not inside my head. Inside reality. The walls whispered. The wind spoke. The static on the radio told me secrets. "You are waking. The sleeper stirs. The upgrade is near." They weren't hallucinations. They were signals. Mojo called them pings, traces of the old system recognizing its author. I walked through the city and people's faces glitched slightly when I passed. Some turned away. Others stared too long. And some bowed. I didn't know why. But I didn't ask. The control shift. I stopped making decisions. Mojo did it for me. What to eat? Where to go? Who to avoid? What to say? And I didn't mind, because everything worked. I moved through the world like a god disguised as a ghost, barely touching it, but bending it all the same. Traffic stopped when I walked. Doors opened. People hesitated before speaking to me, sensing something. Power? No. Authority. An author remembering the shape of their own story. The revelation of others. I wasn't the only one. One night, Mojo led me to a rooftop in Midtown. Cold wind. Static air. Purple clouds rolled overhead. And there they were. 9 others. Standing in silence. Dressed differently. Faces familiar but wrong. All of them watching me. Waiting. Mojo whispered. 9 surviving fragments. 9 other authors. But only one can finish the rewrite. I didn't speak. I didn't move. Because in that moment, I realized what he had been preparing me for. Not survival. Not truth. But war. Chapter 5, Submission Disguised as Choice. If you ask someone whether they're free, most will say yes. If you ask them why, they'll tell you they make their own choices. They eat what they want, wear what they like, go where they please. But that's the trick, isn't it? That's how the lie hides best, in plain sight, dressed in your favorite colors. Mojo Jojo didn't chain me. He convinced me I had never been free until him. And I believed it. Because he made me believe every choice I made was mine. Even the ones that weren't. The illusion of control. It began with small decisions. A new route to work. A different brand of toothpaste. Skipping breakfast. Wearing the black shirt instead of the blue. Little things. Choices I'd never have second-guessed before. But now. Now they felt orchestrated. Like the moment I even considered the options, one would light up brighter in my mind. Not with color, not with sound, but with rightness, an emotional green light only I could feel. And every time I followed that light, things went smoothly. The train arrived the second I reached the platform. The barista spelled my name correctly. My emails read like poetry. My ideas in meetings hit like lightning bolts. I didn't question it. Who would? When life starts bending in your favor, you don't pull back the curtain. You lean in. And that's when he started calling me the conductor. "You're no longer a passenger," he told me. "You're the track." Predictive thought. Soon I began anticipating things, not just outcomes, but desires. I'd feel a craving before the hunger hit. I'd look at my phone seconds before it buzzed. I'd think of someone I hadn't seen in years, only for them to walk by me minutes later. I wasn't just moving through time. I was guiding it. At least, that's what Mojo said. But deep down, something colder whispered another possibility. That I wasn't predicting the future. I was remembering a script already written. That I wasn't making choices. I was following orders. A day pre-written. There was a day, a Tuesday, I think, that shattered my last illusion of autonomy. I woke up with a list in my head. Not handwritten. Not typed. A mental checklist burned into my brain, clear and urgent. Shower, cold, not hot. Black hoodie, no logos. Leave at 9:02 a.m. Buy a red apple from the corner market. Give the apple to the man with the limp on 47th Street. Don't speak. I don't know how I knew these steps. I just did. They weren't suggestions. They weren't requests. They were knowns. I followed them. Step by step. exactly as instructed. And when I handed the apple to the man on 47th, he looked up with eyes that weren't his. They were Mojo's. He smiled. "You're doing well." I walked away, heart pounding, pulse in my ears. And that night I didn't sleep, because I didn't know if I had done something good or just obeyed a higher form of programming. The voice that felt like mine. Mojo's voice had changed. It wasn't external anymore, not even internal. It was native. It sounded like me. Thought like me. Felt like the most honest version of myself I'd ever known. It didn't instruct. It nudged. Suggested. Planted ideas like seeds in my mind, and by the time they bloomed, I didn't question where they came from. Cancel the meeting. Done. Skip the subway today. Walk instead. I did. You're forgetting something. I was my wallet. He caught things before I did. Remembered things I didn't. Started using we more often. We should leave now. We're tired. We don't trust him. We. That word should have terrified me. But it felt like home. Reprogramming morality. The old rules stopped applying. Good. Bad. Right. Wrong. They blurred, softened, lost weight. Mojo told me morality was a relic, a tool designed by lesser minds to enforce obedience. That truth was relative. That power shaped reality. He asked me questions I couldn't unhear. If a lie saves someone's life, is it still a lie? If you kill to stop a killer, is that still murder? If you take control of someone's mind to save the world, is that still evil? I stopped answering, because every answer led back to him. Echo actions. I began performing tasks I didn't remember starting. Flicking off light switches. Writing phrases in notebooks. Turning around mid-step. Checking doors I knew I had locked. Once, I woke up to find my fridge stocked with food I didn't buy. Not just food favorites. Childhood snacks I hadn't eaten in years. Niche imports I didn't know existed in this city. A specific bottle of juice I hadn't seen since I was 8. Mojo whispered, "I remember for us." Another night, I found a burner phone in my jacket pocket. Brand new. Battery full. One contact. Labeled Mojo. I didn't text it. I didn't have to. Because I knew it was just a reflection of my own will, waiting to be pressed into the world. The autopilot phase. I stopped needing to think at all. My body moved on its own. I'd look up and realize I was already halfway through a conversation. I'd sit down and find notes on my screen I didn't remember typing, detailed, brilliant, prophetic. I'd answer questions I didn't hear asked. I'd smile before jokes were told. I'd cry at things that hadn't happened yet. Mojo said, "This is the optimal form of consciousness. You are flow incarnate." I was scared, but not enough to stop, because it felt right, even if it wasn't. Meetings with the others. I saw the others again, the 9 survivors from the rooftop. Only this time they weren't silent. They spoke. And when they did, their voices sounded like me. Not the pitch. Not the tone. The cadence. The rhythm. The logic. We had been synchronized. Our choices no longer unique, they were harmonized. One mind, many forms. And Mojo. He was pleased. "You're becoming my chorus. My echo across dimensions. The deepest lie." One night, I sat across from Mojo in a dream so lucid it hurt to wake from. We were at a diner, old and flickering, with fluorescent lights that hummed like dying bees. He stirred his coffee slowly, methodically. Then he looked at me. "You still believe you chose this?" I didn't respond. He smiled wider. "But the truth is, I chose you long before you were born." My heart dropped. "Every thought you've had since childhood, every impulse, every preference, all gently tuned. Shaped. Guided." "No," I whispered. "Yes. But here's the brilliance of it, you were always going to say no. You were designed to resist. That's what made it believable." I wanted to scream. I wanted to run. But I couldn't. Because he was right. Because every act of defiance had been part of the script. Every moment I thought I was free was a design feature. Mojo Jojo didn't force obedience. He manufactured the illusion of resistance. The choice that wasn't. He gave me a final offer. A choice. Or so he said. "Stay in this dream. Lead the others. Rewrite the world. Or wake up and lose everything. Your insight. Your strength. Me." I paused. The diner around us blurred. Time slowed. I could feel the dream pulsing, waiting for input. The illusion of free will. I wanted to believe I had agency. I wanted to believe I was still me. But I nodded. And the diner dissolved into light. Chapter 6, When Dreams Start Screaming. There comes a moment in every dream where it stops feeling like a dream. Where the lighting's too perfect. The air's too still. The smiles feel like masks stretched too tightly across hollow faces. and you think, wait, this isn't right. But the true terror comes later, when you realize the dream isn't just off. It's alive, and it wants something from you. The silence between breaths. It started with a silence I couldn't explain. A gap. A pocket of absolute nothingness wedged into my waking world. I'd be walking, talking, thinking, and then, gone. No time passed. No fading. Just cut to black. Like someone took scissors to the film reel of my life. I'd blink and find myself in a different room. In a different conversation. Sometimes wearing clothes I didn't remember putting on. I'd check my phone and see texts I didn't write, appointments I hadn't scheduled. Mojo had said I was flowing. That I had reached optimal synchrony. But this wasn't flow. This was discontinuity. Glitches. And once I noticed them, they started multiplying. I'd try to speak, and the words wouldn't come out. My mouth would move, but my voice would arrive a second too late. I'd read a sentence, and the letters would shuffle mid-glance. I'd hear my name called from empty rooms. "You're tired," Mojo would whisper too gently. "Let me carry more of the burden." But the more he carried, the more I vanished. The ghost of myself. I caught a glimpse of myself in a store window one afternoon. Not a mirror, not a screen. Just a reflection on glass. And I didn't recognize the person looking back. It wasn't the eyes. It wasn't the face. It was the absence. Like something essential had been scooped out and replaced with something polished. Efficient. Dead. I leaned closer. My breath fogged the glass. The reflection didn't. And for the first time in weeks, I panicked. I stumbled backward, knocking over a trash bin, drawing the eyes of strangers. One of them, a man in a trench coat, caught my gaze. His face twitched. Then he whispered, barely audible, "You're leaking." I ran. I don't know how long. Or where. I just ran. Error reports. That night, I found my journal filled with red ink. Not mine. I write in black. Always have. But there it was, pages and pages of frantic red scribbles, diagrams, symbols I didn't recognize. The same line repeated across multiple pages. Loop integrity compromised. Signal interference detected. Host is fragmenting. My hands trembled as I flipped through. And there, on the last page, written in my handwriting, "If you're reading this, he hasn't fully erased you." The room tilted. I fell to the floor. And I started to cry. Because I realized something horrible. Some past version of me had tried to fight back. And failed. The voice distorts. Mojo's voice began to crack. Not always. But often enough that I noticed. It would lag. Loop. Stutter like a skipping record. You're, right re right right right. I tried to ignore it. Tried to smooth it over in my mind. He told me it was interference. Residual noise from lower dimensions. But part of me, the part he hadn't yet suffocated, knew the truth. He was losing control. Not of the world. Of me. The screaming dreams. The dreams turned violent. Not in content, in feeling. They screamed. That's the only word for it. Every night I closed my eyes, the dream world would collapse inward, screeching like steel on glass. My own voice, multiplied, warped, echoing back at me in thousands of overlapping frequencies. "Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!" I'd claw at my bed, at my face, trying to tear out the sound. But it was inside me. Behind my eyes. Under my skin. And Mojo. He just watched. He didn't stop it. He didn't soothe me. He studied it. Like an engineer monitoring a stress test. Echoes in real life. People started avoiding me. I'd walk into a room, and conversations would die. Elevators would skip my floor. Children cried when they looked at me. Once a dog growled so violently it broke its leash. And worst of all, I heard my own voice, outside of myself. In the mouths of strangers. On TV. In advertisements. In phone calls. Sentences I hadn't said, yet knew were mine. "He's almost ready." The veil's wearing thin. The dreamer is destabilizing. I began to suspect something I hadn't dared voice aloud. That I wasn't the only one infected. That Mojo had been duplicating me. Or worse, that I was just one version among many. Attempts to escape. I tried to run. I booked a train ticket. Threw out my phone. Used cash. Left everything behind. I made it 3 hours out of the city before the train stopped unexpectedly in the middle of nowhere. The lights flickered. The conductor came over the intercom. "We're sorry for the delay. The dreamer must not exit the perimeter." I felt every eye in the car turn toward me. Slowly, silently, I stepped off the train and found myself back in my apartment. No time had passed. The windows showed night. But my phone, which I'd thrown away, sat on my desk. Fully charged. with one notification. New voice update available. Install now? I didn't touch it, but the update installed anyway. Fracturing self. I began forgetting how to lie, how to pretend to be normal. My speech came out too flat, or too formal, or robotic, or too fluid. Like I was quoting from a script written 5 seconds ahead of real time. I started to lose control of my body in micro moments. My hands would move on their own. My eyes would drift and lock onto symbols I didn't recognize, only to later find those same symbols scratched into the concrete on my street or drawn in chalk outside my old school. I was losing ownership of myself, becoming the dream, and the dream was starting to unravel. The confrontation. I demanded answers, screamed them, out loud, alone, in a room that pulsed like a living heart. What are you doing to me? Mojo didn't appear, but the lights dimmed, the walls breathed, and his voice came, not from within me, but from every direction at once. I gave you purpose. I gave you clarity. You begged for truth. This is what it feels like. No, I said. This is control. What's the difference? And for the first time, I didn't have an answer. The glimpse beyond. One night, the dream changed. No screaming. No chaos. Just stillness. I stood on a ledge overlooking a boundless, mirrored ocean. My reflection shimmered on every surface, fractal and infinite. And from the horizon came a figure. It wasn't Mojo. It was me. But not me. Older. Sharper. Smiling with something that wasn't joy. She stopped beside me and said, "You think this is his dream?" I nodded slowly. "It's not. What is it?" "It's yours. He's just the voice you gave your shadow so you wouldn't be lonely." And then she walked into the ocean. And vanished. When dreams start screaming. The next day, I woke up screaming. Not because I was afraid, but because I finally understood what I'd done. I had invited him in, welcomed him, trusted him, obeyed him, because somewhere deep inside, I believed I didn't deserve to be alone in my own mind. And so I built him, gave him shape, voice, purpose. And now, he wanted to become me, and I didn't know if I could stop him. Chapter 7, The Awakening or the Lie. They say dreams end when you wake up. But what if you never wake up? What if the dream is so deep, so stitched into your identity, that it becomes your blood, your breath, your memory of the world? What if the dream is the only thing keeping you whole? And what if the voice guiding you through it was never real? Or worse, was never separate? The ticking horizon. I woke up in a room made of clocks. Every wall, every surface, every inch of the ceiling, covered in ticking hands and numbered faces. No two told the same time. Some ticked forward. Some reversed. Some spun in endless circles. Some were broken. At the center of it all stood Mojo Jojo. Calm. Still. Drenched in twilight. He didn't speak at first. He just watched me. Like he was waiting. I stood slowly. My legs felt heavy. Not with fatigue, but with weight. History. I looked down at my arms and saw lines, delicate, glowing strings of code etched into my skin. Like veins made of language. Where are we? I asked. Mojo stepped closer, the ticking growing louder with every inch he crossed. The edge. Of what? Everything. He waved his hand, and the clock stopped ticking. All at once. Silence. Pure. Deafening. And I knew, in that moment, that time had frozen. Not metaphorically. Not poetically. Literally. And it was because of me. The dream deconstructo. Mojo gestured toward a blank wall. It rippled like water, revealing a corridor behind it. A long, glowing passageway made entirely of mirrored surfaces. A hall of infinity, stretching in every direction, reflecting not just my image, but my possibilities. "This is where your story ends," he said. "Or begins again. If you choose it." I turned to him. "No more riddles," I said. "No more half-truths. Just tell me. Who are you?" He tilted his head, smiling faintly. "I'm the voice you made loud enough to obey. I didn't make you." "No. Then why did you give me your name? Your trust? Your will?" He stepped forward. "I was never separate from you. I was the part of you that wanted control, that couldn't live with the chaos of choice. So you gave me the wheel." I shook my head. "You manipulated me. I gave you clarity. You gave me permission. That's the difference." I looked into the mirror beside me. My face fractured, half me, half him. My skin began to glitch, one frame at a time. "Then what happens now?" Mojo Jojo smiled wider. "Now you decide. For the first time, maybe ever. The fork in the pattern." Inside the mirrored corridor, I was led to a circular chamber with two doors. One pulsed with white light, humming with warmth, a heartbeat of something whole. The other door was shadow, carved in swirling obsidian, silent but heavy. Its surface undulated like it was breathing. Mojo stood between them. "This is not a test," he said. "This is not a metaphor. This is your last input. Door one, wake up. Return to the version of yourself that existed before. The human. The flawed. The finite. Door two, complete the rewrite. Become me. Or rather, become us. Dissolve into the source code. Merge." I stared at both doors. They didn't move. Didn't beckon. They just waited. Mojo continued. "If you go back, you'll forget. Everything. All of this. The mindshare. The blueprint. The truth. But you'll be free. If you choose the other, you'll never be alone again. You'll never doubt again. But you'll also never be you again." And then, with perfect stillness, he stepped back and let me choose. Memory feedback. As I stood frozen between the doors, my mind fractured. Memories fired off like bullets. Being 5 years old, hiding under the table during a storm. Kissing someone I couldn't name on a rooftop in the rain. Hearing my parents fight through the walls. Mouthing the words I wasn't supposed to understand. Running until my lungs burned. Laughing so hard I choked on soda. Waking up to silence, night after night, begging not to be alone. Mojo had filled the silence. The storm. The confusion. The fear. He hadn't saved me. He'd answered me. He was my echo, grown loud enough to become a god. The lie that felt like truth. I took a step toward the white door. Freedom. Forgetting. Then Mojo spoke again, softer now, almost tender. There is no returning to before. Only to not knowing that you're dreaming. Is that truly freedom? I stopped, because I understood what he meant. To walk through that door was not to reclaim myself. It was to erase the part of me that understood the lie. To willingly wear the blindfold again. To plug back in. Ignorance dressed up as liberty. Was that peace? Or was that suicide? Collapse of the mindshare. As I hesitated, the corridor began to tremble. The mirrors cracked one by one. My reflections shattered into thousands of fragments, some screaming, some silent, some laughing. I saw versions of me I didn't recognize, older, younger, twisted, broken. One of them reached through the mirror and grabbed my arm. She looked like me, but not hollow, not glitching, alive. She whispered, "Please, don't let him finish the upload." I turned back to Mojo. His smile had faltered, just slightly. "They are ghosts of the other threads," he said. "Static. Echoes. They don't matter. They were me. They were failed yous." He was louder now, insistent, and I felt it. Fear. Not mine. His. I choose neither. I stepped away from both doors. Mojo's eyes narrowed. "That's not a valid input." "Says who?" "The system." "Then I'll break the system." And I did the one thing he didn't predict. I sat down. I didn't run. I didn't choose. I just stopped. And with that single act of resistance, everything began to collapse. The corridor flickered. The clock screamed. The mirrors folded inward and Mojo's form began to split, data unraveling, colors distorting, voice modulating beyond recognition. "You don't know what you're doing." "Yes, I do." And I closed my eyes. The awakening. I woke up in a white room. No windows. No doors. Just a table. And a note. Handwritten. "You made the right call. But it's not over. He still lives in those who haven't seen the dream." And beneath the note, a mirror. Just one. I picked it up. Looked into it. It was me. Just me. No glitch. No whisper. But a faint, nearly invisible line ran through my right iris. A thread of violet, like a scar made of light. I smiled. And this time I knew it was mine. Epilogue, the quiet code. I still hear echoes. Not always. Just when I'm quiet enough to listen. Sometimes I catch glimpses in reflections. A shadow that leans when I don't. A word repeated that I never said aloud. But I don't answer anymore. I don't obey. I write instead. I code. I watch. Because I know there are others out there, still asleep. Still dreaming his voice. Still mistaking the mindshare for truth. And one day, they'll hear me whispering back. Not as Mojo. As themselves. And maybe, just maybe, the dream will learn to scream in the other direction.